masters and masterful game players, one and all, to this week's episode where we take a peek behind the GM screen once and for all to answer the question on everyone's mind. How crazy is your favorite mild-mannered GM? Well, welcome to the end of Dead Men Roll No Crits and this very special GM special. This is your specialist GM Patrick here, and joining me in questioning my own sanity and scruples are my four friends and foes, Jabert, Rebecca, Seth, and Tyler. How are you guys doing?
Oh, my heavens. Hello. Good greetings.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Halloween, or whatever day it is when this comes out.
December 15th.
Merry Halloween, everybody.
Don't watch Nightmare Before Christmas for Christmas. It's a Halloween movie. It's not a Christmas movie.
No, you have to watch it in both Thanksgiving times, right in the middle.
It's not both.
I watched it on St. Patrick's Day, and then I think about what would have happened if you went in that shamrock door instead.
Yeah.
That would have been a great movie.
I wonder
that
every time. I want to see the shamrock door. I want to see the Easter Bunny door.
Irishmen.
Why
Irish
was there
people
never a
everywhere
sequel?
Getting sick.
It would have been absolutely, I would have been absolutely racist and amazing.
I guarantee Tim Burton has something to say about drunk Irish people. My wife and I, or I've suggested that we
also have
some
things
movies
to say about drunk Irish people.
Yeah, well, every time I have a sip, my wife and I watch a lot of the same holiday movies every year. I've suggested we add some to our list. And the main one I want her to see is now just like, if I ever want to induce tears in myself, it seems like it was going to be really bad. It's actually pretty okay. The new Wonka movie, Timothy Chalamet. There's a part at the end. I just watched the clip today and I started crying. I was like, oh no, this does it to me.
When he sings the song, because that was the only part that got me.
No spoilers, Rebecca, but oh my God, it's the song. I was like,
most of the movie was
wait, the song and the musical? That's crazy.
Yo, it's at the very, it's the last
thing
song. And you aren't really expecting it. And then it's like, oh no, it's made by the guys who did the Paddington movies, which are very good. Apparently. Mm-hmm. I would like to watch those too.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you should. Paddington 2 is so good. Like, surprisingly,
I've heard that Paddington 2 is like the Infinity War end game of that
the
kind
Paddington
of
connected.
I don't know.
Universe.
I don't like Avengers, but I will say Paddington 2. I only watched it one time, but I cried like the entire movie.
Oh man, I'm ready. I'm ready for it. Yeah, well, that's the time of year when this episode's coming out. Hopefully our listeners out there are snug as a bug in a rug with their friends and family. Welcome you all to the episode, besides the What If special that we did a few weeks ago, the one that I'm the most excited about, the GM questions special. There are no questions that I will not answer tonight. There are no holds barred. Punch me in the face if you want to.
Okay. What's your social security?
Is that a question?
Okay. All right, Tyler.
Yeah, if I punch you, does that count as a question?
Tyler, if
what
you
sound
guess
do
it,
you make if I punch you in
I
the
will
face?
Confirm. I will confirm what it is. No, but yeah, nothing,
nothing
outside the bounds. No, my social security number is not 00000001. Jabert?
You're the oldest man in the universe. And so,
did someone have one?
The very first ones were sequential. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then at some point they were like, this is a bad idea. We shouldn't do it like this.
Terrible system. So I have, for every episode we've ever recorded, had very intricate episode notes of, you know, what we're doing, where we're going, you know, for gameplay stats and everything. But this week we're doing something different. I don't got anything for this episode. I have this little introduction and that's about it. So I've asked you guys last week, we recorded a couple weeks ago, but the episode that came out last week, to come up with some questions for me specifically, or things, it doesn't have to be a question, it could be just be something you want to talk about with me about maybe GMing or the campaign. And I thought we'd just do a little round robin Q&A. You pitch me your Q's, I knock out A's.
You give us A's.
I use my ability to answer a question. Yeah. What who
Patrick,
wants to start?
I want to know how you would have handled it if we had insisted that Harrington was the coolest pirate that had ever sailed the seven seas, and we insisted on bringing the Wormwood back to him.
Oh, you mean bringing the Tidebreaker Barnabas back to him?
We refused the call to adventure and just insisted on being lackeys of Harrigan.
So in this scenario, I'm imagining we still kill Plug.
Yeah.
So we murder them, but then
because he tried to betray Harrigan, our best friend,
our bosom buddy.
To be fair, he doesn't seem like he's that much of an antagonist in that first book. It's his crew that are you're getting the most interaction with. So I totally understand. We talked about it a little bit in the What If special, where I set up maybe book four you would have worked for him if you had sold the Isle of Empty Eyes to him. But if you had gone back immediately after book one instead of scuttling the ship, I imagine it would be a lot of the same, but you would be in like a small fleet with the Wormwood and doing some of the same stuff, like looking for treasure, maybe trying to crack the rock. But I don't know. That's a good question.
I feel like oftentimes these adventures are like, don't let them do this, because if they do this, Harrigan's gonna cut their heads off. But obviously, like, you can't just like do that.
Well, that's the thing. I think it suggests, like, you know, maybe it suggests in the book, like, if they go back to Harrigan, they'd be put back in shackles immediately. It's like, give me my boat. Or maybe you get a captain for your new ship that's like even worse than Plug.
You know, you just have to do book one again.
Meet your new captain, Mahim the Naga Killer.
that's always the scariest thing, is when you do wish there were like pop-ups that for your players, like, warning, going past this point would mean a severe off-road adventure from the books that you have signed up for. Click OK before proceeding.
Reminds me of Elder Scrolls Morrowind. Like, if you kill someone, they're like, this person that you've killed is integral to the main storyline of the game. So we recommend that you don't do that. Go to a previous save. Or you can continue in this doomed world that you have created. I think it actually words it that way.
There's pretty much a lot of stuff in almost all of the Pathfinder books that's like, if you kill an NPC that's integral to some plot point, they will have notes of like whatever criminal conspiracy they're a part of or the dark ritual they were about to do. They'll have them in their room, you know, somewhere. So you just got to look around.
Everybody's got a diary, right?
Yeah, almost any time they're just like, you know, some PCs might just kill so-and-so as soon as they can. And
Sometimes the thirst overtakes you.
But worst case scenario, you kill someone you're not supposed to. And in Pathfinder universe, there's rituals where you can talk to the dead. So, bingo, bango. Any other questions here? Or is that the end of the episode?
Plug, we need to bring you back to life. We need to bring you back to life to fight this other guy. His name is Gup, and he's even worse.
Gulp.
We're teaming up with the bad guy from the first.
No, Plug it's versus Gulp.
G apostrophe Gulp. Gulp.
Gulp.
Because his name was Plugg. Who's gonna hit me next?
That's a dumb name.
Question number two.
Now he's dead with his dumb name.
Stupid dead person.
Patrick, what character would you have made to play Skull and Shackles?
Oh, man, you're asking the real hard ones here. So you thought about doing a bard first, Tyler, I think, when we started. And I was totally on board. Between the first time I GM'd Skull and Shackles and the second time, I just thought that those kind of characters that can really get into the heads of the enemies, including a swashbuckler that you played, just work great in this universe. You want a loquacious character in a campaign to, you know, be able to throw shade at enemies. So that's a pretty big one, would be a bard.
What languages would you have picked for that bard, Patrick?
Whatever the player's guide suggested, probably.
Awkward. But specifically Cyclopean, with like a sub-degree in Cyclopean. awful person. But still upset about it.
If the campaign, if other people were playing like spellcasters or something similar to a bard and needed a martial class, I would have picked a gunslinger. I think, you know, this is one where you can, you know, totally have someone that has a very arcane looking gun and it makes sense. And it's not a super stealthy campaign, which is something that I'm always like harping on when people want to play gunslingers. It's like, okay, there might be some times when you want to sneak around, and if you're firing guns, it won't work super well.
Use a suppressor.
I don't think there is for a blunderbuss. But yeah, I would probably do one of those two classes. You guys picked all the good ones between monk, rogue, druid, swashbuckler.
Ooh, a swashbuckler sounds delicious.
Squashbuckler. I think we already coined
a leshy swashbuckler.
Oh my god. We coined Buck Swashler a few weeks ago.
With like a flintlock, I don't think a suppressor would work, but with a muzzle loaded weapon, it might actually work.
I don't know. It feels like
the
explosive chamber is like kind of outside of the gun for
not with a muzzle loader.
That's the trick.
It would make a click on the outside, but the explosion happens inside the gun with a muzzle loader. So
there's some gun YouTuber out there that's already done this. I'm sure we need to search for this content.
I'll figure it out.
Add a silencer to your silencer on a 55.
That's right.
Yes, there is a YouTuber that's YouTuber that's made a suppressed muzzle loader.
All right, well, this episode is canceled. For the next 20 minutes.
We're gonna take back the country from the British.
You're playing a gunslinger. What role on the ship would you have wanted to try to be the captain, or would you have wanted to be more of a?
It's the same thing.
Running around in the rigging. Yeah,
I think it depends on what was needed here. If in this scenario, Tyler, you were the GM of the campaign, which, I mean, let's be honest, that would have been awesome. I would have seen if anybody else wanted to be captain and stepped up if needed be. But to be honest, when you go from GMing from as long as I have to playing, you are ready to take a back seat character. Mm-hmm. when I got to play Kingmaker with my friends up here, our buddy Kyle, Jabert and I play with as GM. And I was like, I'm going to be a healer. I'm going to be background healer. And I was literally like the friend of one of the other characters who became like one of the major characters in the campaign, our barbarian. It was just like, I'm going to keep this barbarian alive. She's
I remember. The second thing we did with NSA was a game where I was a player and I wanted to play a robot that was a awakening AI, but was not wanting to reveal that fact. So I was dead silent for most of the game. And like the DM was like, are you sure? And I'm like, I am so.
Sounds awesome to me. That's my favorite.
I would love to be a C-3PO or an RTDUT as well. If I played in a Starfinder campaign, I would definitely take a back seat.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, for CritterCon, if you ever want to do a challenge where we play through all 6 books in 4 hours on Twitch, I'll do that for you.
Can we just all do like 20 combat actions in like one? Just like I rolled 20 times and let's just go through the lineup here.
Wait. It'd be
the only way that would be possible.
Would be a sprint. Well, I was thinking, this is a bit of an aside, but I don't know if you've ever watched, there's a guy on TikTok that runs users through like the Pokemon Gym Challenge where he just spins a wheel. So it's either win or lose just on a wheel spin. And then if you lose, you're out of the gauntlet. And so that's what we would do is I would just have a wheel and then we would determine if it was easy, medium, hard, or extra hard difficulty. We just spin the wheel and see how far you guys get.
Like fast way to lose. Next question. Hit me up. Keep them coming, folks. Keep barraging me.
I have a question.
Not so fast, Rebecca. Jeez Louise. Gosh. Let me finish answering the last question. All right, go ahead, Rebecca.
Do you have a favorite monster from the campaign?
I mean, there's a lot. Any of the sea creatures, I loved. I think they're some of the most Skull and Shackles feeling. And unfortunately, a lot of them were like early in the campaign. I love the grindy lows. I love the Sahugin. Basically, anytime you had an underwater fight, it was I was in for a good time. You fought a giant, you know, octopus. It's just so cool. So much
and
fun.
And that crab. Didn't we have that crab that one time that we tried to befriend?
Yeah, yeah, I'm throwing crabs at you. The hermit crab was a ton of fun.
Oh, don't forget the boars.
I'm
kind of disappointed that the boars never really paid off.
Yeah, well, you know, they were just boars. So all of our jokes aside, it would have been hard to.
I mean,
boars with thumbs, apparently.
A boar had a character arc. Okay.
You know what? Like, there's now ancestries. If we were doing this campaign today, ancestries for uplifted animals.
That's true.
Imagine this boar, like,
yeah.
His emergence happening because a bunch of people beat up his.
He's an expert climber.
Boar survived that encounter. I'm fairly certain that would have taken it to at least level two if it was a level one boar. Like it got a class level in that fight.
It did. It leveled up as it leveled down by literally falling off the cliff. But yeah, there were a lot of monsters. A single one, my favorite, I can't really say, but I think as a class, some of the underwater beasts, as far as like NPCs go, you know, from Whalebone Pilk to any of the pirate boss fights that you guys had, I enjoyed a good deal.
I can't believe the answer isn't just hardcore, flat out, straight up the whale. You remember that octopus shark thing? That thing was crazy.
he was part of the Grindy Low tribe. That was a fun one. And like I said, also the Sahugin, which was in book two. Really love them. Love their design. I kind of wish, you know, I feel like if this campaign was made today, there would be like more of a continuing threat throughout the campaign. Yeah. It was just hard for me to add in stuff like that when there's so much like actual pirate content in the books, and I cut stuff out too.
Because like those are the moments that like if this were a TV show, you know, we wouldn't actually get to kill whatever that Sahugin leader was that was kind of causing all the raids and the bad things to happen. Right, they would get away.
Mm-hmm.
And later they would show back up again at in an opportune moment.
Where they come back as a undead.
Yeah, neck. You know, so something like that. But you know, when you're when you have the books like this, you know, you don't want to be like, oh, you know, I wrote book four. Hey, book five writer, here's a Sahugin person that I've handed off to you to deal with.
And don't worry about making the characters yourself. I did the work for you.
Yeah.
You woke up and
I wrote plot points for your book, and I also wrote some scenes for you. And you know what? I got it. Never mind. It's cool. I got your book.
Shoves Patrick aside. I'm DM now.
Maybe some of the reason we spent so much time in book four is because I love all the varied monsters on the Isle of Empty Eyes, from dinosaurs to demonic harpies and the Cyclops, of course, and a bunch of like random encounter stuff that we did too. You know, just fought like a fungal plant monster in the swamps. You fought a black dragon in another swamp. Will-o'-the-Wisps. Did you fight Will-o'-the-Wisp there?
I don't remember fighting Will-o'-the-Wisp.
Just bunch of cool stuff. Stuff on the island.
Yeah.
All right. Who has anyone not asked a question yet? Seth, did you ask?
I have not. Is there a character of ours that you had trouble planning around? And conversely, is there a character of ours that you never felt threatened by at any point?
No. In various points, tons of stuff was a bother to me. I think Rebecca got like a bleed weapon just a little too early when we talked about that. But like sometimes just bleed on a boss is like, oh boy, very powerful. And just bleeding everything. At one point, Honto is definitely doing like the most damage. And then another around book three or four, when Jabir Candoso just started transforming into giant animals all the time and casting these high level spells, is the episode where you pushed the Cyclops off the tower, especially. I was like, oh, this is, I thought this was going to be a much harder fight. Never mind.
That was not like the coolest moment in my entire TTRPG career. Don't think that that's what druids are always like. That was just, that's just the coolest thing that's ever happened to me.
I feel around the same time. Cassius also kind of popped off with gunplay and swords and things like that. So not threatened or combat wise, but making story elements for, you know, it's one of those things. I think, you know, when we started the podcast, I talked to all you guys about character creation and about like potential plot hooks and things to work into the story. And I mean, for the four main characters, I will say the most difficult was Candoso, because so much of the backstory stuff that we had would not happen until like way later when the Chelish invasion started. So yeah. I was a little worried that you'd feel a bit background as far as like initial storytelling goes. But
this might be a personal preference of mine, but honestly, mm-hmm. When every character has some sort of backstory tie-in with the main plot, it starts to feel kind of unrealistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't mind being kind of a background character. That's
That's the thing. And we talked about it because you had already played most of this campaign and were the captain of that ship. So it's like
I sort of had my turn.
I didn't feel terrible about not having you front and center, but I also didn't want Candoso to kind of disappear in that form. And the same thing with Alaris. Alaris had a lot to do kind of later on, but wasn't the stuff with Uncle Olivia didn't really come to the forefront until book four, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
this is just me perhaps being a contrarian or something, but I honestly like background characters. I tend to like the dark horse, honestly, more often than not.
Yeah. Yeah. And then sometimes it could be, you know, your character can have a quest and it doesn't have to be massive. It could be something as small as, you know, you want to open up a bar once you're done adventuring. It's like, okay, well, all you need is to find a place and get enough gold and that's it. And then you can just talk about it like as you're going, or you want to find, you know, an heirloom that your family lost, stolen.
It's like the fastest way possible to make to open an establishment. I'm just going to be a pirate for a couple of years. Like,
yeah,
don't work for several people for decades until you finally save up. It's like, I'm just going to be a pirate a couple of years. I'm going to open a bar. So I'm going to do.
You know, there's a ton of.
I'm not going to die to a Naga. It's going to be fine.
there are a ton of One Piece characters that, you know, they want to be the best at something,
yeah.
But like their quest isn't like always at the forefront. And the one that I really like, and it's probably a good example of this, is Sanji. Maybe isn't like always at the forefront, but his like quest of like finding, you know, all the tastes in the on the planet and getting to the end goal, the one blue, or what's it called, Tyler?
All blue.
Yeah, that's just something that just drives him, and you know, there's not a ton of tie-in necessarily all the time with his quest, but it's there. So that's a good example of probably something I would do.
So there was not a single character that you felt didn't really ever give you any trouble.
Didn't give me any trouble, like as a GM.
Like while you were playing an encounter, there was never a character where you were like, "Oh, I have to make sure to have something to counter this character."
that's the thing. In first edition, I would say the majority of my prep would be like trying to figure out if it was going to be not fun for the party because of the wizard, you know, or because of the fighter just being able to, you know, trip this like one enemy
and
him on the ground the entire time or something like that. And it's not as big of a problem in second edition. And I guess I worried about that a little bit when we started, because we hadn't played second edition before, but it's so balanced. It's crazy balanced, I think, for especially parties of four. And I will say when we in my IRL game play six players all at one time, I do have to go back and rebalance things a little bit, but for the most part, just adding a level to some monsters or adding one more wolf to the wolf pack is all that it takes, and it's not gonna take that much brain power to edit it. A lot of my time for prepping combats was more worrying about the conversion and trying to get things transferred over from first edition for this adventure. But no, I don't think so. Towards the end there, like, there's really nothing I could plan around because your level 20 characters were just scary all around. So, but that's as they should be. They're the most powerful pirates in like this entire worldscape, you know. But episode 200 was fun. That very reason. I could throw anything at you. And like I said, I almost did just a full CR25 Tarrasque. But I was like, kind of wouldn't be boring if that was the only fight. It was just like one giant creature. So I opted for three kind of closer
level. You chose wisely.
Yeah, the Tarrasque is honestly, it's like one of those things that's honestly just kind of frustrating to fight. I don't think it would have been fun to watch us try to figure out how to fight a Tarrasque. Like, I just...
Oh, and it's just, I mean, I'm never a big fan of all V1, you know, where you just have this one colossal thing. I think that works great in video games. I think it doesn't work as well in, you know, map-based tactical combat. I like when
there's one way to find out. Open roll 20 right now. Let's go.
Oh, geez. All right.
I like it when there's a lot of moving. I like it when there's a lot of moving parts and pieces. Like some of my, you know, one of my favorite, you know, Pathfinder times was with like troop combat. And then when they were like all platoons and everything's moving around and you're doing a bunch of stuff with that, I always really enjoy those. So I think you made a wise choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Everyone's asked a question. Let's go maybe around the horn again. If you got some more, anyone can throw out another.
We sort of, this came up a little bit, but like ultimately, like Hanto was able to sort of like get on board with hanging out with the pirates. But like, what if we'd all showed up and were like, I hate being kidnapped. I'm never gonna be a pirate. is there a world where we become like pirate hunters that you would have allowed, or I guess what my real question is how off book is too off book for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, like, in this campaign, you're obviously working with pirates a lot, but you are fighting pirates as much as you are working with, you know, someone like a Tessa Fairwind. But no, I think if you are cool with it as GM, you could really roll with a lot of punches. And that's why, you know, there's so many people out there that are like, evil parties can't work. And it's like, no, it totally can work. You just be evil to eviler people, you know? you be absolute jerks to more evil people. And it's like, that happens all the time in real life is, you know,
the thing is
bad people going against one another. And
an evil party is difficult to get to work with inexperienced role players.
Oh yeah. No,
and because with people, like they think like, oh, an evil character. So like, they hate everyone.
The
and they,
baddest thing well, that I can.
Yeah, and they attack everyone on sight because they're bad guys, and it's like
I literally not had all to, the time
with my teens that I play with Pathfinder. I had to talk about the Geneva Convention and why you just can't break those codes at a gaming table, and it's like, okay, well, that's a good. I literally had a 12-year-old boy like Googling them. To see, it's like, I can't torture people. It's like, yeah, no, you can't.
Wait, let me check the Geneva
Convention. Says it right there in the Geneva Convention.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, like,
everybody make sure that your country's patches are on your uniform before you go into battle.
This is the opposite. You say that, but Patrick did torture Cassius in DMRNC. So we know he's not, we know he toes a line.
That is a rule for players only, Tyler, obviously.
Okay. I misunderstood. So, you're right.
Yeah. To Jabert's question, how far is too far? I think you can convert this campaign into a end the pirates, no more pirates campaign. And it's not going to.
There's a couple different ways you can approach it, too. It's like you can be like, okay, well, we hate pirates, but what's the best way to deal with them is to pretend to be pirates and to play along with their BS so we can do the most damage to them.
That is basically playing an evil campaign, but playing a good campaign in like a chaotic world of the pirates. And, you know, boy, howdy, I just keep thinking of examples. I really like Dexter as an evil person that kills evil people. I'm a big fan of the Green Hornet, who's a good person.
I went straight to be evil. To Dexter's lab. I'm just going to let you know.
That scientist is straight evil. And so is Dee Dee.
If there ever were a better representation of lawful versus chaotic, I don't know what it is.
You are stupid. And don't forget, you are stupid.
I'm a grandpa.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's very different. If we were playing 4-hour sessions on Sunday and my next 4 hours were ruined because you guys went a weird tangent, I just wasn't prepared for it, I'd be a little angry. But if you go on weird tangents in our podcast or just like our play sessions, I can usually go and prep the next week for that different direction. You know,
like close out the next like 45 minutes and.
Yeah, so I'd be more forgiving of it here on the podcast for sure if all of a sudden your neutral party wanted to break bad, or vice versa, if you wanted to be good pirates. And what a lot of these questions are could have been in our What If special as well, because that's true.
That felt like that was more focused on things that actually happened in the game and the contingencies.
Yeah, no, I understand. But how I would have handled it is certainly a question for the GM. And I think, you know, springing it, stuff like that on me while we're recording, probably not the best for content. But like, you know, there's also we have out of game conversations about, you know, Seth and I have talked a lot about, you know, Honto, especially early on, maybe just going full catatonic because, you know, certain things would be way too triggering or what have you, and how that would affect, you know, so-and-so happening. And
a lot of very bad memories were thrust into the forefront right away for him. So like I was having trouble trying to figure out how to play the character for a bit because I'm like, this is trauma times 1,000 right now. So yeah.
And that's not even something that was like going through my head, but in retrospect, if I had spoiled, you know, what was going to happen on the Wormwood, we could have just added this into the role play and things like that. So, yes. Question then sixth, the next question. Who's got one? We'll take a couple more.
Yeah, I got a question. I got a question, sir. Hand raised.
Zoom has a button for that.
Oh, thank you. Click.
Where is it?
In the early part of the show, or pretty early on, you had to manage a very large NPC cast. How did, like, do you have any advice for GMs, how did you prep for those episodes where, you know, you don't know necessarily which NPC we're going to, like, key off on to try and talk to or snuggle up against or you know, what have you. And I mean, yeah, did you keep notes that were like, oh, this person sounds like this and they like these things? Or like, I mean, did you have profiles for them or what'd you kind of do?
Yes. Early on, my notes for book one, especially, were very NPC centric because the majority of that book is you trying to win friends and influence people, you know? And very specifically, there were some first edition
book
rules.
Title, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, Dale Carnegie, baby. Okay. It's so good. That book is great.
There were rules about influence them into being friends. And that, you know, has some effect on the final fight with Plug, because some people will stand by. Some people will join him if they hate you. Some people will join you if they've got your back. And yeah, so I had to keep pretty copious notes in book one. And I think I tracked it on the ship map specifically through like the color border around the NPC, like as soon as you made like a good friend with one of the other pirates, most of whom were also press ganged onto the ship, they just kind of went into your camp, went into your bucket. And yeah, so I did a lot of that tracking early on. And then as we continued on in the adventure and you guys became captain and the first officers of the ship, you know, we talked about it. It stinks that they kind of fell to the background a little bit, but there was four more PCs that came along. So we were really focusing on a lot of them after that point. So
it gets to a point where it's like you're big and important enough. It doesn't really matter how most people feel about you. You know what I mean? Like at that, yeah. When you get to a point.
Yeah. There's not a part of the campaign that's like, oh, you know, actually it might suggest at one point that someone tries a mutiny. If you like keep failing at like certain tasks or whatnot, or people abandon ship at port, if you're a bad pirate, but yeah, you guys were very competent. So we never had that happen. Question 7. Who's got it? Let's go. We're rolling. Not all at once. Calm down.
Oh, let's all ask a question one word at a time.
Oh, no.
If you
could
remake
the
fabric
of
the Pirate's Code.
All right, that's three words, but
all right.
What would it be?
There you go. Well, I mean, we tried, gang.
Yeah, I don't know. The pirate code's pretty good. It's based on real pirate code, so I don't know if I would want to remake it. But it seems that's a player question because you guys became literal king of the pirate kingdom. Are you adding something to the pirate code? Like, be excellent to each other.
I loved the this is a bit of a tangent. I'm going to talk about making my character that no one here saw. Except for Patrick. When I was writing my character for the first time I played this, that was a lot of fun because I looked up the pirate code in the player's guide. And then I looked up and I was reading about it in real life and sort of the ways that people adhered to and broke that, and that was a lot of fun. And oh man, I'm just reminiscing about making that character. Like, I learned how to draw a face, and like I sketched out the character, and I drew all of her weapons that she had, and like they were all engraved with stuff. And it was
That's that's one of the main things that inspired me to keep drawing is when I picked up doing D&D. So yeah. I get that.
Yeah. It was so cool. That was so much fun. Anyway,
it's not something I do as GM very often, but when I am a player and I have like extra time, I do care so much more about like very small minutiae of my character. And part of that is drawing and making sure your gear is like as cool as you can possibly make it.
Yeah.
Or through books for different equipment, stuff like that.
I guess who was your favorite character from the AP, like just either thematically or just like that just resonated with you, like not any of our stupid characters, but one of the ones that came from the books itself.
I was about to say, I really did. I think one of my favorite parts of the entire podcast was allowing you guys to name the stupid NPC pirate.
Oh, that was a lot of fun. The name that was a lot of fun.
It was always so much. Dude,
it was all fun until we hit Dad murdering Jim, and what was that?
That was mine.
What was Jabert's like? Something drape great?
Nope. That was Jaundice Jape. Jaundice Jape was the name from the AP, but he didn't like that name, so he wanted a new name. And so I tried to give him a new name, and then everyone got all bent out of shape, and I gave him a new name. I gave him a perfectly good new name, and everyone said, no, that's inappropriate, Jabert. How could you?
That
was a wild time.
The worst one and best one was Balin's Current. I was like, oh, wow, Jabert made that, and it's such a great name. You know, for a pirate, Balin's Current. And he was just looking at a bill on his desk that said Current Balin.
Oh my gosh. It's so infuriating because you're deceived. You're like, oh, well thought out, Jabert, only to find out that he's just looking at his desk. And you feel gutted.
I felt that way about my friend who came to our IRL game, and I was all excited to see what he'd put together for this campaign, and he goes, my name is Bill Cable, It was like, wait a minute.
I thought you guys had a discussion about those characters. That's pretty funny.
So, okay. Bit of a sidetrack, but we had a friend of mine, his cousin, was not at the age that he was invited to play with us, gifted with the most creativity. And I remember he was going to run a game, my friend, that is. And he looked at his cousin's character sheet to try and see that everything was copacetic, and he immediately took out an eraser and started going crazy at the top of the page. And it was like, whoa, Wolfie, what's going on? And he was like, he wrote Sephiroth as the character's name.
Yes. Hell yeah. Dope.
We didn't get much better, though, because the character ended up being called Kyle Katarn.
All right, that's a very cool name. You know, it's
Kyle Katarn, but the N's gone.
Kyle Katarn is a great name, too.
Why not?
I have a love for, like, very simplistic names. Like, it was a joke on Freaks and Geeks that what's-his-name's character in D&D was Carlos the Dwarf. I think Carlos the Dwarf goes so hard.
It does.
I wish I had both creativity and lack of creativity, but I wish I had it in me to make a Carlos the Dwarf, you know, and play it earnestly.
Like, think about it. Think about in Starfinder, right? Like, or just, you know, any role, like, every character has to have, like, a cool name, right? Where it's like,
yeah.
I don't know, not everybody who's competent has a cool name. Mm-hmm. But, like what if you had, like, this really cool, like Blade Runner-style hardened detective guy, and his name was just Joe? Like, that's fine. Like, it's fine if your name is Joe.
It's fine.
None of us had a cool basic name. We all had cool names.
But you guys all have cool names in real life.
Patrick, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
It's a two-parter. Part one. What advice would you give people trying to convert things over to 2E?
Mm-hmm.
Second part. What is the next Pathfinder 1E campaign that you would like to convert over to 2E?
Boy, oh, God. That's a really good question, Tyler. So for the first part, they have done an official conversion now of Kingmaker from first edition to second edition and first edition to D&D 5E. Just get those books. Get both books and compare them. That was not available to me when I started converting Skull and Shackles. I wish it had been, but also use your Archive of Nethys and... Yeah. Use it well. All the rules are on there. All the rules are on there, and there's so many great examples, monsters and NPCs that you can beg, borrow, and steal from. As far as converting another Pathfinder campaign would be a tall order, because I love a lot of the first edition ones, but it is a lot more work than just running one of the many that they've already published in second edition. But there are a couple that I never got to play in first edition that are just so iconic, so much fun. Let's go down the list. The main one, the number one, I think with a bullet, would be Carrion Crown.
Oh! Which
is the universal monsters of the Pathfinder world. It's set in Ustalav. It's the, you know, Romania or Transylvania kind of inspired horror setting for Pathfinder, and it's just so cool. It's such a cool campaign. I've not dug super deep into it because I was like, well, maybe there's one day where I play it.
What if, yeah, I mean, like, what is it about those settings, right? Like, you know, Curse of Strahd is huge in Dungeons and Dragons. Like, Ravenloft is just such an interesting place. So, like,
it's so good.
So, I think it's all the forests that are around there.
Yeah. People like trees. I've noticed that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you put a bunch of trees on like a model train set and all of a sudden it's popping off.
Yeah. People have you just seen a model trees. Train set without trees? It sucks.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not good.
That's just a lonely person with a train.
Yeah. This is a sad man in the basement with a train.
Yeah. Like I was playing with trains as a kid. Like I remember my uncle came over. He's like, this sucks. Where's your trees at? Stuck with me forever.
He's like, yeah, you gotta get the little like electrodes on the thing and make all the leaves pop onto it. Like do it in reverse.
I'm so sorry we're making a mess of this episode, Patrick.
Oh, it's okay. I just wanted to talk about the two other campaigns that I think would probably worth the effort. Mummy's Mask is the other one that, you know, folks have played it on podcasts before, but I think it would be very fun in second edition. And then Iron Gods. If we were ever step away from Starfinder, we could play Iron Gods, which is Starfinder, 25% Starfinder, like mixed into Pathfinder. It's set in Numeria. It has aliens in it and androids and barbarians. And it's kind of the setting that is closest to Conan the Barbarian, but with tons of sci-fi elements. So
interesting.
I think that would be
Dark Sun plus aliens or something?
It's a little Dark Sun. It's the area where like a spaceship had crashed long ago into Galarion. So like the Technic League is basically magic orders who control like that technology. But there's all kinds of stuff. Like you go into this downed spacecraft or parts of the spacecraft, and there's portals to other worlds, other planets, and all kinds of cool stuff. And that would be like probably the adventure path that would work the best in taking Starfinder classes, Starfinder 2E classes, and like allowing players to play them in a Pathfinder setting, you know? So
yeah,
that'd be a fun one. Don't give me ideas for more podcasts.
just to timestamp our history, I scrolled all the way up in our Discord messages, and it was 3/11/2020 where you sent me a message that says, "Hey Tyler, I was thinking about it last night, and I actually wouldn't mind GMing Skull and Shackles for you." It's literally what you.
Oh boy,
that was right before lockdown.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like March was like the month where it all hit the fan. I remember.
Yeah,
it was like the day before. I think it was the 12th that everything kind of shut down.
Yeah.
It's around the time I was thinking about, man, I'd love to play some more games with my buddies, with my friends.
And then the world was like, here's an excuse to start.
Here's an opportunity.
Would you like some more time for that?
Tyler and I had just
Clippy comes up and says, it looks like you're trying to fit more hours into the day. How'd you like to live in your house all the time?
Tyler and I just finished a very long 3-year campaign of Iron Fang Invasion for first edition, and I was like, I do not want to play anymore first edition anytime soon. But second edition, like I said, has been a challenge, has been fun converting, and it's just a more fun system to play and somewhat easier to GM, I would say. So as far as the conversion goes, it was difficult to convert because I'm not just reading straight from the book, but it was more fun to play. So it's kind of balanced out. Right. Well, we should probably wrap this up. But,
I have a final question. Oh, I have a final question for all of you, not just Patrick. Patrick included. Now that DMRNC is done, if people want more pirate media to consume, what would you recommend? And I will go first. I actually have two.
You're going to answer your own question?
Yes, and you're going to take
two of the options?
Wow,
two she teed herself up. Two. What the she hell? She teed herself up. What a Chad.
All right,
go.
I guess I'm going to be stuck being like, have you guys ever heard of Treasure Island?
No, all right. So one is Our Flag Means Death, which I love, love, love. It's so good.
People won't leave
show. I watch me it and my, multiple
people
times.
Won't leave my husband and I alone about that.
I mean, watch it or don't. I don't care if you watch it, but I love it personally. I really like that. And it's campy and funny and sweet and I love it. Anyway, I also would recommend, so I've only read the first two books of this. I'm only just now realizing that there are but there's a series of books called The World of the Narrows by Adrian Young. And it starts with the book Fable. I've read Fable and Namesake. Anyway, it's about a 17-year-old girl who is abandoned by her pirate father, basically. But she has magical powers of some kind and can treasure hunt under the water. Ooh. Anyway, it's a delightful tale, and I feel like there's some Alaris in there. So it came out in 2020, so I had not read that book when we started this campaign. But as I was reading those books, I was like, I can see some, you know, inspiration or potential inspiration here for my character. So anyway, recommend it.
Fun.
Cool.
I feel like this is a question Taylor made for Tyler, who's our resident pirate expert.
But, Tyler made.
Before we get to Tyler, Seth and Jabert, do you have some favorite pirate media?
Muppet Treasure Island.
A classic.
Woo! Like literally shiver like Muppet my Treasure timber, Island. Shiver my so sail, good.
Dead men tell no tale.
Also Waterworld. I'm just joking.
Don't get me started. I love Waterworld.
I'm sorry that you do.
Jabert, any pirate stuff you like?
There's an indie movie that I really love. It's got a few actors you may have heard of. It's called Pirates of the Caribbean.
I knew he was going there.
And no one's ever seen it. Or
in particular, I really liked the fourth film.
Yeah, I mean, when they made the fifth one, though, it really pops off. I mean, it's weird that such a little low budge movie got so many sequels. But it just must be a development team that's really devoted to this project. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I'm not the world's biggest pirate fan. I read Treasure Island when I was a young person, like I don't know, 10 or something, and like I was like that was the coolest book I'd ever read in my life. Obviously I didn't write it, but that I'd ever read in my life. That was also around the time I was like reading Three Musketeers and like Count of Monte Cristo, and like I was getting into like all those like adventure-y kind of books. And I mean, if you're a small child listening to this, like small as in like, I don't know, maybe like, I don't know, between 7 and 12 or whatever. Yeah. Read Treasure Island. That rules. Hell, if you're an adult, read Treasure Island. Treasure Island's still a great book and it's a lot of fun and it's a swashbuckling adventure.
Tyler, I don't want to steal yours, but,
One Piece.
The main one that comes to mind, like not only because it's one of the longest ongoing pieces of pirate media out there, but it is also the closest I would say to a tabletop role-playing game. So they're on a continuous adventure. They keep leveling up and getting more powerful. They keep collecting more crew members on their ship, and all of those are BT members, you know, each one after the main five, you know, feels like an additional BT member. But One Piece hitting its 25th anniversary this year. It's not going to stop anytime soon. If you're worried about there's tons of other great shows out there, but none of them, you know, have more than a couple seasons really. So One Piece. Tyler, what's your go-to for pirate suggestions?
I'm going to give two because Rebecca gave two.
There you go. Way to go, Rebecca.
So if you want more pirate media that allows you to feel like a pirate, I want you to go and you have friends. If you don't have friends, this is not for you. Go out and buy a board game called Forgotten Waters. Forgotten Waters is an app-driven board game where you get to play as a pirate character and you get to have this kind of like choose your own adventure through this app and this booklet. And it's all voice acted and it's really, really immersive and it's really wild and fun and raucous and really kind of allows you to indulge in some piratical fantasy. That's one. If you want a more abstract look into piracy or pirates and which is sailing, right? Pirates and sailing. This is going to be a weird one. There's this book. It's called Shanties from the Seven Seas. Ooh. It's a collection by Stan Hugel. All the shanties that I know come from this book. This is a shanty man who, and I don't know if you guys can see it, but it's literally just stanzas and lines and lyrics and a kind of history of specific shanties and kind of when they were sung, why they were sung, and all sorts of things like that. And so it's a microscopic part of pirate life, but also more importantly, sailing life. There were always shantymen on ships, and the lyrics and why they were sung and in what kind of situations they were sung kind of gives you a glimpse into the less romanticized part of pirate life, which was
hard work.
How do you actually live on a pirate ship for months and months and months with people? Mm-hmm. So it's very fun. There are a lot of different songs in here. And what's great is if you can't read music, it does give you the titles of the songs at least, and so then you can Google them, and usually you can find people who actually perform them at Ren fairs or in festivals and things like that. So if you want to, for Halloween, if you want to be a pirate, or if you want to sound more like a pirate on Talk Like a Pirate Day, and you want to learn some sea shanties, you should absolutely do it. One of my favorite sea shanties is one of the first ones in the book. It's called A Rovin, and it is raunchy. So go learn that.
Raunchy. All right. Well, definitely not a GM question, but I still appreciate it, Rebecca, because I just got a whole bunch of cool suggestions for stuff. That's going to do it for us here on End of Dead Men Rollin'. We got just a couple, one more episode with everybody here, so make sure to come on back next time to sign off with us. For you listeners, Patreon Pirates, Freebie Captains, thank you all for chatting with me, and see you all on the funny pages. So long. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
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 Yoo-hoo.
Bye-bye.